Today, we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.
There's no need to fear. Underdog is here.
When criminals in this world appear and break the laws that they should fear and frighten all who see or hear, the cry goes up both far and near for underdog.
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 Underdog. Speed of lightning, roar of thunder.
This world, the headlines read of those whose hearts are filled with greed, who rob and steal from those who need to right this wrong with blinding speed. Goes underdog,
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 underdog, speed of lightning, roar of thunder.
Hello and welcome to the 52nd episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave Joe and Mike, and joining me as usual is Kevin, Professor Roscoe Dog Thompson. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How are you?
I am doing pretty good, actually.
And today we are going to be talking about Underdog, and no, I'm not going to do the un-un-un-un-un thing. Oh my god. Hey, you know, if you string that along, it's like none.
So that, just for the counters out there, that's the first time we've said underdog.
We're counting.
Oh, God. No, I'm just kidding.
1, 7, 25, 45. Yeah, I can't count.
I knew you didn't know how to count.
I got no education when I was a kid.
You were watching too many damn cartoons.
Damn right. What's been going on with you, sir?
Let's see. I'm actually being a good son right now because my mom's in Florida, still got another week out of she's been there for about a month, and I actually am redoing her entire bedroom, and I tore up all the carpet and got it down to the hardwood floors and just kind of surprising her with a little home makeover, I guess you could call it. And then,
where's Ty Pennington when you really need him?
I know, I don't need him.
Come on.
And then I've been starting another big project over at BTVA. I've been trying to screen cap all the G.I. Joe characters. And so far I got about, I don't know, 50 of them done. I've got another 100 or so to go. Well,
you know, this is really, really sad.
Uh-oh.
When I was looking up stuff on a certain website that I told you about off-air, which we're not going to talk about on-air, I was looking for the guy that voiced Flint. I could not find it. I actually have to go back to the episode 25 script, if I even still have it, to even look it up. I cannot remember for the life of me who voiced Flint.
And I actually just looked it up today, and I had it. But the reason we don't have it on BTVA yet is because we don't have that actor's picture yet.
Plus, there's no real compares for it.
No. I can't remember his damn name. And then I did, I think I mentioned last week that I was doing a couple compares, and I haven't done that in a long time, and I just put a Galvatron and a Cobra Commander one up recently, so that was kind of fun.
Oh, well, I'll have to look at that.
I did almost have a freaking conniption fit, though, because I put the Cobra Commander one up, and after, like, the first couple of days, Charlie Adler was actually winning. And I have nothing against Charlie Adler, but I have something against anybody but Chris Latta winning.
Yeah. You know, it's actually funny. I don't know who handles your all. I don't know who handles behind the voice actors Facebook stuff. But
it's actually all of us. But okay. You can kind of pick out if you read enough of our updates, you can kind of pick out that there's certain people that do more updates than others, and
right.
That use certain language over and over and over again.
Well, my point is, I saw a post. I don't know if it was the actual account or if it was the fan page or what the hell it was, but saw a post about the Gorilla Grodd voice compare.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh my god. I'm not even going to pull it up because I don't want to ruin the bandwidth with this recording, but Powers Booth is the only one that I like as Gorilla Grodd from Justice League. The old Gorilla Grodd from the Super Friends show, it's not horrible, but oh no, I know what it was. It's our favorite person to hate. That Optimus Prime fucking ripoff, Neil Kaplan voiced him in something.
Oh.
Voiced Gorilla Grodd, and I listened to that, I was like, oh my god, I just lost about 7 fucking brain cells.
Yeah. We did have something interesting, though, with our Facebook page. I had mentioned last week that we were getting more and more fans. We've actually had 5 voice actors add behind the voice actors page as a favorite or become a fan of it.
Right, cool.
Including someone you talked to recently, Gary Chalk.
Cool, very cool. Yeah,
so, that was pretty cool. I got to watch what I say now on all my comments.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Facebook, if you don't have to go through their agents and you can just send them like a fan message, like, you know, tell them how much of a fan you are of their work, and then maybe at the end of the message request an interview or something.
Yeah.
You know, Facebook and Twitter are pretty much the two big ones where I've gotten pretty much all the interviews that we've done outside of the Larry Kenney interview. Mm-hmm. That was actually an email back and forth, but
it was just kind of cool because we've already had one voice actor become a member in the forums, which, you know, our forums aren't real popular yet, but but it's kind of cool to have a couple that actually fanned it or favorited it or whatever you want to call it on Facebook.
Yeah. No, I mean, one of these things where I think a lot of the voice actors, I know Tara Strong does, like, status updates, but I haven't seen a whole lot, I haven't seen Gary Chalk do a whole lot of status updates as far as, like, what he's doing, or even just to give his opinion on something. Mm-hmm. He's more of, you know, becoming friends with everybody, or fanning, you know, fan wanking a page, or something like that. Which is fine, if that's the way he wants to use it, fine. I mean, you know, if, like, everybody wished him a happy birthday on his birthday, and he sent out a wide thank you to everybody. So, I mean, it's not, you know, and I'm not trying to speak ill of any voice actor whatsoever, well, with the exception of that bastard Neil Kaplan. But it's one of those things where, you know, they have so many fans or they have so many friends. That's why a lot of voice actors or a lot of famous people or producers or whatever cancel their personal accounts. Mm-hmm. And start the fan pages, because that way they can keep their personal account for people that they actually know.
Yeah.
And then keep the fan page. That's one of the reasons why I kind of set up our fan page for Geekcast Radio Network. Not that I don't want to be friends with people. I really do. But I think, I don't even know. I'd have to look it up, and I'm not going to look it up. I'm too lazy. It's Easter, and I don't care. I think I have like 130-something friends, and it's like, it's mostly mutual type stuff through like Radio Free Cybertron or This Week in Geek, or if people listen to the shows and they find me on Facebook, which is fine. I mean, if they want to find me, that's fine. And I'm not saying don't add me as a friend on Facebook. I'm just saying that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of voice actors or celebrities will create a fan page. Is to kind of keep, you know, it's kind of like celebrities and paparazzi. You have to keep them outside the door.
Right. I will say, though, that as far as my experience goes so far and just running into or dealing with, you know, anybody that's, I guess what we'll call celebrities, it seems to me like voice actors are the coolest when it comes to being part of the fandom or embracing the fandom and, you know, granting interviews or talking and doing that stuff, it's like they, it's almost like, not that they're nerds or geeks themselves, but they kind of are, a lot of them, and it just seems like they're more open to their fans than celebrities in other other areas of the world, like sports or acting, like live action actors or music or different stuff like that.
Right.
I did want to ask you one thing, kind of off topic, just because I had seen it. I tried to get myself killed over at another website that I won't mention, but what's your? I saw a post about David Kaye not being involved in the next Transformers cartoon. What's your opinion on that?
Unfortunately, you know, hey, it's Hasbro's deal with Discovery, and they're going to cast, or they're going to have Susan Blue cast who she feels is right for the role. I think it's kind of sad that they're not having, you know, the second, you know, the second guy in Transformers history to be with it the longest, outside of Sue Blue, who's been there, like, overall, over the last 25 years, the longest, David Kaye is next in line, and he's the only one that ever switched. He's the only one that ever switched from Decepticon or Predacon to Autobot or Maximal or whatever you want to call it. You know, he's the only voice actor to ever switch a role like that. I wish he would be involved in it, but if... I just don't know what direction they're going with this new cartoon, Transformers Prime. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that it's going to be a tie-in between Movie 2 and Movie 3, which I am completely not in support of. No. Just no.
I've got a couple other comments to make, but I don't understand 25 years after the fact why nobody has decided to just pick up after G1 stopped and try to make a cartoon where they stopped.
Well, all right.
Or to take the time that they skipped in between episodes and the movie and try to make a cartoon based on that storyline. I mean, but that's what I wanted to say is that I have nothing against Gary Chalk or David Kaye. I think they've been fantastic on all the Transformers stuff, but I'm kind of actually in support of, even though I know he's upset that he's not involved with it, I'm kind of looking forward to see what they do and to have another take on, I'm assuming, you know, some of the main characters like Prime or Megatron or whoever.
Well, Prime is probably most likely going to be Cullen. You know.
And I can't complain if it's any of the G1 guys, but if it's not, I'm kind of for a new take on it, I guess, is what I'm saying. I mean, I like Kaye and Chalk, but I'm willing to give someone else a chance.
If it's going to be something completely separate, like Transformers Animated was a love story to G1. Like you were saying a second ago about the about going back and making a cartoon series after G1, you kind of can't do that because of the simple fact that after Rebirth, if you don't count the Japanese continuity, if you ended at Rebirth, like it did in the U.S., you then skipped to Beast Wars. Beast Wars and Beast Machines tied in all this stuff from G1, and then I don't even count the Unicron trilogy because that's all Japan crap. And then you skip ahead to Animated. Animated was pretty much an updated version of G1. It wasn't G1 specifically, but there's a lot of G1 nods and elements inside that cartoon. It is really a very well-done cartoon. So I think they kind of already did that as far as, like, bringing, not really continuing from G1, but bringing the sort of aesthetic back to it. As far as this new cartoon, I'll wait until I see some more of it, but I'm telling you, if it's a movie 2 to movie 3 tie-in, I'm going to absolutely fucking hate it. I don't care if they, you know, force Mr. Welker to wear a respirator to, you know, make his Megatron sound better. I don't care. If it ties into the films, I don't want it.
Wow.
I want something new and different. If I can't have a season 4 of Animated, which we know is not going to happen, I want something new, different, a fresh approach. not something to tie into these goddamn cash cows of these fucking movies that honestly, really, since I've watched them, since I've had the DVDs, like the last, Revenge of the Fallen I've had for about, 6 months or whatever the hell the damn thing came out on DVD, I honestly can't stand either one of them anymore. The movies themselves, not the voice acting, as far as the voice acting, that was fine. The movies themselves, I don't like them anymore.
Yeah, I still somewhat like the second one. And I don't know, I still think it's cool to see them transform in like a live-action style, but I agree there was so much that was bad about them and that went wrong. Like I said, last year G.I. Joe was better than Transformers.
I don't know if you've heard me say this before or any of the shows. I don't think I've said it on this show. Michael Wilson, who is a co-host on ToyCast and who is the third of the three of us, me, Steven, and him, do Beast Unleashed. He sent me a direct message, on Twitter, a long time, about a year and a half ago or something or other. It was like right, it was when I was still doing TFG1. It was right after the episode with, Megatron stole the lightning bug or whatever the hell it was. I don't remember what it was in the cartoon episode. Sent me a message, says, I love using this quote, but I remember this so fondly because the message was, Michael Bay needs to stop raping my childhood like Starscream rapes metal bugs.
Oh, jeez.
You know, it's one of these things where I think there's only three Michael Bay movies that I actually like. Outside of the Transformers ones, there's only three that I actually like. Bad Boys 1 and 2 and Armageddon. Other than that, he needs to take his pompous ass and go somewhere. He needs to step down, let a true Transformers write. Now see, that's the problem with him. Kurtzman and Orky, I can't insult Orko like that, but anyway, he brought in these guys who are supposedly, you know, these huge Transformers fans, and look what we fucking got.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously? Now, granted, I'm not going to say that, yeah, it should have been all G1, or yeah, it should have been all, you know, fan wanks or everything else. It shouldn't have been, because obviously you have to figure out, you know, real life. You know, how are these things going to work in real life? I get that, but if you're going to bring writers in to write a story and they're the experts, let them fucking write it. Don't, you know, dip your fucking pen in a fucking quill and try to rewrite half the shit.
Yeah. We've gone off topic.
Extremely.
Underdog.
Shut up.
That's two.
Yeah. So myself, what's been going on with me? I just got, we're actually recording this Easter night or Easter evening or whatever the hell you want to friggin' call it. I just got, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Smash Up. It's okay, I like it. It'll probably be a good button masher when I'm pissed at some stuff, but, I needed another game because, I've beaten Metal Gear Solid 2, 40 fucking times in the past month and a half. I just play that game now just to mess with the damn soldiers and, you know, shoot them off ledges and watch them, you know, plummet to their death and all that. let's see. Still doing the Radio Free Cybertron guest hosting. As long as they'll have me on, I'll be on that. Let's see here. Still in preparation for ToyCast 50. We actually have already recorded the segments for the winner announce and all that stuff. Just have one segment more to go. That should be released soon. Well, again, by the time this goes up, it would have already been released. Hell, we'll probably be on episode 60 by the time this one goes up. But, yeah, other than that, not much else is going on with me. What else did I... I don't think I've really gotten anything else. Hell, I don't know. Alright, so, Underdog. Take it away.
I got, before we do that,
I got to throw one thing out there to get way off topic one more time.
Oh, God.
Have you seen anything about the new Voltron or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoons that are coming out?
No.
There's a new Voltron and a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle show coming out.
Oh, crap.
I just throw that out there. We'll get back to that in another episode when I...
Well, all right. Well, no, you might... Well, not really the Turtles. I want to focus on Voltron because I noticed a news story over on TVshowsOnDVD.com that WEP and Media Blasters and whoever else puts those sets together, they are re-releasing Lion Force into two volumes.
Yeah, I saw
so
that.
So instead of five tins, you're going to have two volumes. Well, I get that the tins are probably not available anymore. I don't know if they're out of print or if they're just not available like at regular retail. I know they're available on Voltron.com. I'm happy with my tins. I don't want a condensed version. That, you know, honestly, when, way, way back in episode... oh, crap. Which one? Oh, God. Episode 2 when we did Animaniacs. I always got 2 and 3 mixed up because it was Animaniacs and Tiny Toons back to back. My main complaint about the Animaniacs DVDs, as they got released, they kept getting smaller and they kept compacting them. Where you have a compact case that has two DVDs on each side, one on top of the other. I hate that.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan either. But these new shows are being put out by one of the... It's Nickelodeon, but I don't know which one of their channels it is.
It's Nicktoons, probably.
But they're putting out a new Dragon Ball cartoon, a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoon, a new Voltron, and I'm trying to think of the name of the Voltron. It's Voltron, colon, and then it's a word that starts with a P, but I can't remember it right now.
Flying Force.
No, it's freaking can't remember. It's not Pandora, but it's something like that. It's like Voltron, whatever. But I'm interested to see. I guess it's gonna start this fall. So between that and the stuff that the Hub's doing, I'm actually excited for the first time in a long time about this next year's season's lineup of different cartoons. I mean, half of them will suck, but if there's that many, there's got to be something that's gonna be cool.
Yeah.
So anyway. Had to throw that out there.
Okay, so history lesson, go.
All right, for today's history lesson, we are talking about Underdog 3. It's an American animated television series that debuted October 3rd, way back in 1964, on the NBC network under the primary sponsorship of General Mills, and continued in syndication until 1973. So that's a pretty long run, and it had approximately 124 episodes. Underdog, for Shoeshine Boy's hero alter ego, appeared whenever love interest Sweet Polly Purebred, I can't stand that name, was being victimized by such villains, I like this name, as Simon Bar Sinister or Riff Raff. No, not the Heathcliff Riff Raff. Underdog always speaks in rhymes, except at one time, actually, such as, "There's no need to fear, Underdog is here." Five. His voice was supplied by the frequent guest on Hollywood Squares, Wally Cox, probably best remembered as Mr. Peepers. And one more note in the history lesson, like many of the shows that we talked about in the Hanna-Barbera Spotlight, you notice that this one was in the 60s, which means that there was lots of sub-components to the show, which we'll get into later. What do you remember about Underdog?
Just the whole Superman ripoff, you know, the whole phone booth thing. When I was watching, I probably should save this for the actual show, but when I was watching the episode today, I watched like 2.5 episodes of this thing, because, yeah. No. But when I was watching the episode and I looked at the Lois Lane wannabe, and that's what I'm going to be calling her for the rest of the show. I'm not saying SPP.
Polly Purebred.
Yeah, whatever. PPS or PMS or whatever. ICUP or whatever, I don't know.
that would make this show a whole different show.
well, iCup. But anyway. when I first saw a close-up of her, I'm like, hey, wait. And I know you're going to kill me for saying this, but the first thing popped in my head, I was like, wait, why is Huckleberry Hound not blue and dressed in drag? And I saw a profile shot of this character, of the side of her face, and her big honking schnauzer. The fact that she wasn't blue, her face reminded me just like Huckleberry Hound if he was not blue and a little bit fatter.
I have no comment on that.
Oh crap. Yeah, I honestly don't remember that much else about it.
I remember less. I didn't watch the show as a kid. I know the theme song. I remember that from when I was a kid, and I remember what Underdog looks like, and that he, you know, has the U, and that's 9, and everything that he did, and everything like that. But I couldn't have told you a darn thing about the actual cartoon. I couldn't have told you any of the other characters. I couldn't have even told you the premise for the show or what he was doing. So I don't really remember that much about it, except for the theme song and his little famous quotes and stuff like that. But I don't know.
I hate to interrupt you, but I know a lot of people are going to kill me for saying this, but Underdog was pretty much the dog version of the Ruby Spears Max Fleischer Superman cartoons. That's pretty much all it was. Him shoe shining somebody, the Lois Lane wannabe screaming, the villain taking her away to his hideout. Him going into the phone booth, coming out, underdog, whatever. That's 11.
I think we're up to like 13 now.
Whatever. Underdog.
18. All right. I think for me, there. If you go back to this generation of cartoons, which I'll call, you know, late 50s. And then the whole decade of the 60s, I kind of lump all those together because the 70s is all kinds of different. But these early cartoons, unfortunately, I think Underdog is part of, what's the company behind this one? This is, I know General Mills is the sponsor. I don't know who the actual production company is. I haven't looked ahead in the script enough, I guess. Whoever it was, we'll get to it later, but I don't know if it was Total Television or what it was, but whoever it was, I guess I'm just not a big fan of their stuff in general, and so I think Underdog suffers from the fact that they weren't from one of the companies that was the big name successful companies of the time. They're not a Hanna-Barbera show. They're not anything to do with Warner Brothers. They're not anything to do with you know, some of those other major ones back in the day, which I'm drawing blanks on right now. And I think my biggest thing is, I guess I'm just not a fan of the style and the storytelling of whatever company did do this show. But I'll save some of those thoughts for when we get to the actual show.
Well, I'm looking at it down here because I skipped ahead. I don't know who actually made it, but it says here that Underdog also aired on ABC in Australia and in February 18th, 1966. In 1995, Biggers, Stover, Covington, and Harris, with General Mills, negotiated a sale of the creations to Saturday Night Live producer Lorne Michaels, who later sold the rights to Golden Books. Classic Media currently owns the underlying rights to Underdog. So,
okay.
Whoever the hell
I think there was a company called Total Television or something that was all around too, like in the beginning before it got sold to all these other things. And I'm just not a fan of their stuff in general, so I guess it's, but I don't know. I'll save some of those thoughts for later. But we can get into the characters and a couple of the voice actors. I do have some comments to make about that. Obviously Underdog is our main character. 20 was an anthropomorphic superhero parody of Superman, like we mentioned, and obviously other heroes with secret identities. Even some, like we've talked about in Hanna-Barbera, like Hong Kong Phooey or something like that, I guess.
Yeah.
The premise was that humble and lovable Shoeshine Boy, a cartoon dog, was in truth the superhero that we talked about before, Underdog 21. George S. Irving narrated, and comedy actor Wally Cox provided the voices of both Underdog 21 and Shoeshine Boy. And then when villains threatened, Shoeshine Boy, this is original here, ducked into a telephone booth, where he transformed into the caped and costumed hero, destroying the booth in the process when his superpowers were activated. And he, most every time except for about once, I think he spoke in rhyme. Like, when Polly's in trouble, I am not slow for it. Pip, 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 and away I go, or something stupid like that. But, you know, he has his catchphrases, and he has his little shtick that he does all the time. As far as his voice actor, I'm not a fan. I think it's cool when he does do the, there's no need to fear, Underdog is here. Like, that's cool, but that's his only good line as far as I'm concerned, as far as voice acting goes.
Yeah.
I just do not care for Wally Cox at all.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And then, of course, your Lois Lane takeoff was voiced by Norma McMillan, Sweet Polly Purebred. She was a little better. I got a little, in the episodes I watched, it seemed like she was kind of inconsistent to me. There was times when I liked her voice acting and other times where I was very annoyed by it.
Uh-huh.
To me, the best voice acting in this show is the bad guys.
Yeah, probably.
Which are both the main ones, Simon Bar Sinister and Riff Raff are the main two, and then of course you had some sidekicks and stuff like that, but they're both voiced by Alan Swift. I'm not necessarily a huge Alan Swift fan, but I like him doing these voices compared to the other characters in this show, at least.
I think this is the first time I've ever seen his name.
Yeah. And, you know, they're kind of, I don't know, I like the bad guys in this show maybe even better than the good guys. But, and the other villains, you had the Electric Slippery Eel, Batty Man, Tap Tap the Chiseler, Overcat, and quite a few other things. And you had Simon Bar Sinister's his assistant named Cad Lackey, who a lot of people on the internet were saying that he looks like Bill Clinton. I don't know if I buy that, but you can check it out if you want to, I guess. But which characters out of the, if you take the main two good guys and the main two bad guys and the sidekick, I mean, did you like any of them?
No. I just don't like. I don't know what it is. Well, when I was a kid, I thought this show was funny. Like, the Underdog part of it, I thought was really funny because of the whole Superman parody, but it's like, really? Wow.
Yeah. I just never could get interested.
Complete cheese. You might as well put fucking Grape Ape in this show and have him be King Kong, because that's pretty much what they did almost every episode with the Lois Lane look-alike.
I like the fact that I went to watch this in preparation for this recording, and I had to sit through, I think, at least 15 minutes worth of animation, 15 minutes worth of cartoons, before I ever even saw Underdog. Like, he was MIA. Like, they showed a whole Underdog clip, and something we'll get into when we get into the regular show. They showed a whole Underdog clip, which did not feature Underdog at all at this point. It's like part one of the storyline. And then they went ahead and showed one of the components, and one of the components, and one of the components, or whatever. I had to freaking go look up and find the second part of this before I ever even saw Underdog in the cartoon. I don't know. I don't know what they were doing, but I guess if I had to pick a favorite character, it's Simon Bar Sinister. And if I had to pick a least favorite character, it would be all the others. Like I said, I don't remember this much as a kid because even as a kid, this show really didn't interest me.
Yeah, so, you know, I completely agree. And it's not really so much as a kid. I think one of the reasons why a lot of this show appealed to people was because it was the Superman ripoff.
Mm-hmm. It was like a bad version of Danger Mouse.
God, no. You did not just compare Underdog to fucking Danger Mouse. Danger Mouse kicked ass.
I know, but they're similar in as far as like ideas, like the premise kind of, I guess, but Danger Mouse is like 1,000 times better than Underdog.
Yeah.
And this is one of those, like, sometimes when they make movies off of cartoons, like, usually I'm like, oh, skeptical, whatever, like, this might not be good. But I'm still, you know, inside kind of excited, like, oh, that's kind of cool. When I saw that they were doing a movie of this, there was not one ounce of me that was excited at all. I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me.
And Brody didn't help the situation either.
So
I don't mind him doing voices at all, but oh God, Jesus Christ, yeah. Jason Lee, come on, have Kevin Smith throw you another cock bone or something.
Actually, I think my favorite, I just changed my mind, my favorite character in Underdog was the narrator. Because I actually liked his voice.
Let's move on to the only other segment that we're actually going to talk about. There were a bunch.
I'm going to talk about all of them.
I'm not talking about none of them. Only one that really mattered to me, and only one that I really, really enjoyed, and I just now realized why I enjoyed this, was Tennessee Tuxedo and the Walrus Chumley. It was Tennessee Tuxedo and His Tales, I believe, was the name of the cartoon. Or the segment here, and the incomparable Agent 86, Don Adams, voiced Tennessee Tuxedo.
In the exact same voice, by the way.
Yeah. All right.
I'm not saying it's bad. He has got a
cool. Right. Well, if you look at Maxwell Smart, Tennessee Tuxedo, and Inspector Gadget, they're all the same voice.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you have Don Adams, Agent 86, the biggest bumbler in television? And I say that with love, I really do, because that was part of Max's, you know, whole shtick, was that he was this bumbling detective or whatever, or control agent or whatever the hell it was. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. So the Tennessee Tuxedo role was his voice as well. It's a little bit different than, obviously, the Get Smart role, but when he would get to Gadget, which we've already covered Gadget, so this is kind of like, yes, we're coming to you from the future. When he would get to Gadget, it's just like, wow, it's an animated Maxwell Smart.
Yeah.
And it was just awesome.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. There are certain guys that, you know, there's two types of, besides the crappy ones, there's two types of good voice actors. You're a good voice actor if you can, like, change your voice and do all kinds of different things and nobody knows it's you and you just, like, do all kinds of crazy stuff. And then you're a good voice actor if you just have a kick-ass voice and you're fine doing your same voice like Don Adams is. I mean, kind of like Chris Latta in a way. He didn't do a lot of variations of his voice.
See, I've never actually heard his real voice, so I would never be able to tell you.
Yeah. I mean, he changes it up more than Don Adams, but he's kind of like one of those people that just mastered one type of voice that was so cool that you could do it in multiple things.
Right.
I mean, obviously you have people like Frank Welker and a ton of other that can change their voice so much, and it's just insane. But I have to give credit to those guys that just have such a kick-ass voice that they could just use it over and over again. Because some people use their same voice over and over again and they don't have a cool voice, which kind of bugs me. But basically, Underdog, they switched the format of Underdog a lot throughout its run over kind of that whole decade. And usually there was four parts in the show. Unlike some of the Hanna-Barbera, which usually had three different segments. Usually Underdog had four parts with, Underdog either being the first one or the first and last one, and then a couple other ones being sandwiched in betweens. At one point they switched it. My problem is that Underdog was, unlike the Hanna-Barbera ones, were short segments that had a beginning, middle, and end within that 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes, whatever it was. Underdog didn't do that. Underdog would take its 5 to 10 minutes, and it would give you the first of, like, 2, 3, or 4 parts of one story, which, in my mind, doesn't work in this type of format. And the reason I'm saying that is, if you have a standalone show, like a G.I. Joe or a Transformers, you can do a to-be-continued or a cliffhanger or a whatever, a 2, 3-part episode, and it's fine. But if you're going to show one part of a story, and then you're going to go and show 3 completely different cartoons in your half hour, and then come back like the next day or the next week and tell the second part of that, to me it just doesn't work as well. Like, when I was watching this for preparation, I watched what would have been a full episode back in the day. So I got one segment of Underdog, and then I got one segment of something else, and I'm like, where the hell is the rest of my story? not that there is much story in Underdog, but I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of the format they were doing. It's just maybe it worked. Maybe people wanted to tune in the next time to see the second part, and then tune in the next time to see the third part. But that just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I could have sworn they usually did the cliffhangers on the final part of the Underdog show, like the cliffhanger episodes. I could have sworn those were at the very end. They would start out with an original story at the beginning for Underdog, and then they would go through the segments of Tennessee and whoever else. Right. I don't remember the other segments. I don't really care about the other segments, and I'm not going to talk about the other segments. And then the last cartoon would be an Underdog cliffhanger, which would leave you with the next day or the next week or whatever. I could be wrong.
The one I watched showed Underdog, the first part of a story.
Mm-hmm.
Then it showed two other segments, and then it showed the second part of the first, it showed the first one at the beginning, it showed the second part at the end, but it wasn't just a two-parter, it was like a four-parter.
So
then you would have had to watch another episode and saw the third part at the beginning and then the fourth part at the end.
Okay.
And it's just, by that time, it's so broken up.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch four different parts spread throughout either two episodes or three episodes or whatever. So I'm just not a big fan of it. I will mention the other ones. We're not going to talk about a lot of them, but the ones I have no recollection of are a show called The Hunter, a show called The World of Commander McBragg, and Klondike Cat. King Leonardo and His Short Subjects was sometimes in the middle. That's a little more popular. And then the two that I actually saw episodes of today was Go Go Gophers and Tudor Turtle. And I just have to say something real quick about each one. Tudor Turtle was okay. I guess. But I couldn't figure out what the hell the point of it was. I watched the whole show and like there was no plot to me. I was just lost during the whole thing. I mean, the actual turtle's kind of cool, but it is pretty bad. Go Go Gophers I have to talk about because not only is it extremely dated, but it is appalling. It is borderline racist. They are two gophers dressed up like Native Americans with buck tooth, obviously.
Wow.
And not talking very well. And the scene I saw, there's a Joker guy who is supposed to represent, I guess, General Custer. And it's like Custer's last stand with these two gophers on the top of a hill dressed like Indians, and they're throwing snowballs at each other.
And so basically these two gophers are are Native American, country-fied, redneck versions of Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
But Intergun!
It was just like, it was disgusting watching, like, the U.S. Army and the Native Americans and the way that they treated, like, that's not something to make fun of in a cartoon to me. Maybe that's the history teacher in me coming out, but I mean the voices were all right in it. But good lord, if that show was tried to air today, someone would be fired.
Yeah, somebody would be put in jail.
But I think all of these segments have something similar, which is they're all bad
except for
Tennessee Tuxedo. I like Tennessee Tuxedo and Chumlee. I especially like Chumlee. But
that's gonna kick your
almost all of these segments, including Underdog, the main segment, are just bad. The company that was doing all this stuff didn't know how to tell a story. And I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Where the hell are we? Do we even go into the behind the scenes? Because I don't even remember. We've gone so far off topic on this. Not really, but I mean, where are we?
We're just starting behind the scenes right now.
Oh, God.
So that was the show. That was the voice actors and the segments.
Okay.
Now we'll do a little behind the scenes.
All right. When he is not Underdog, he is incognito as Shoeshine Boy. Like Superman, when trouble calls, he hurriedly dresses in a phone booth, which would inexplicably explode upon his conversion. In order to release his powers, he must take an Underdog super energy pill. Oh, God. just give me a second.
Way ahead of his time.
No. Just give me a second here. Because
I have something about this later.
They're trying to say that it's okay to take heroin, speed, whatever, in pill form.
You gotta read the next line.
Oh, crap. No.
The Underdog Energy Vitamin Pill.
That's bullshit.
Encouraging kids to take their vitamins.
That's bullshit. That's bullshit. I call bullshit on that because, all right, look.
Wait till what I tell you later.
No, wait. Because you have little shoeshine boy over here who's a little wimpy kid or a little wimpy whatever. And then when all of a sudden somebody, you know, the little Lois Lane wannabe screams for help or somebody else screams for help, he takes out his damn PCP pill, pops it, help. All right, forget PCP, heroin, or crack cocaine, steroids. He takes his fucking steroid pill, gets these miniature giant fucking muscles, the phone booth fucking explodes. Oh, God.
Yeah.
God damn it. The only thing I liked about that whole scene was the sound effect of the phone booth exploding. I thought that was a good sound effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving right along.
Fucking druggie.
He keeps one of these pills inside a special ring he wears at all times. Before taking one, he would often utter the words, "The secret compartment in my ring I fill with an Underdog Energy Vitamin Pill." Several episodes show Underdog losing the ring and being powerless since he must take another pill as his superpowers begin to fail. Without my super energy pill, I grow weaker and weaker and weaker still.
Wait. This happened in 1964, correct?
Yeah.
I need to go back and look and see when the Looney Tunes cartoon Super Rabbit was made. Same premise.
Yeah.
Exact same fucking premise. When the little scientist made these super carrots for bugs, he held them in like a little cigar holder.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Underdog is shown to have the power of flight, super strength, and invulnerability to conventional weapons. It never talks about his super hearing, that he can somehow always hear this chick whenever she says something. The number and scope of his superpowers are inconsistent from episode to episode, being subject not only to the conventions of superhero comics, but also to the conventions of humorous cartoons. In one episode, he easily moved planets, safely butting against them with his rear end. In another episode, his super energy pill, diluted billions of times when added to a city's water system, was capable of giving normal humans who drank the water enough strength easily to bend thick steel bars. And then, of course, he also had things like X-ray vision. I like this one. Super breath. What the hell is that?
Well, super breath is pretty much the super breath thing. The X-ray vision and super breath are pretty much taken straight from Superman, because Superman's super breath could either be cold.
But he also had atomic breath.
Right. So maybe he gone nuclear?
Oh, it does say he has ultrasonic hearing, of course.
Yeah.
And a great calculating brain. I guess that's a superpower. Anyway.
He is not the goddamn Batman.
Moving right along. I don't know the writer, so I'm not going to say anything about him.
Yeah, I don't either, so... The actual show, oh God. In 1959, handling the General Mills account as an account executive with the Dancer Fitzgerald Sample Advertising Agency in New York, W. Watts Biggers teamed with Chet, I almost said Chef Stouffer, Chet Stouffer, Tradewell D. Covington, and artist Joe Harris in creation of television cartoon shows to sell to breakfast cereals for General Mills. The shows introduced such characters like King Leonardo, Tennessee Tuxedo, and Underdog. Biggers and Stouffer contributed both scripts and songs to the series. When Underdog became a success, Biggers and his partners left Dancer Fitzgerald Sample to form their own company, Total Television. There you go, Total Television.
There we go.
With the animation produced at Gamma Studios. Oh, God.
That's why.
No. Just look at that word, Gamma.
Yeah.
Hulk smash! in Mexico, God. Now, I crack on some of the Canadian animators, but Mexican animation, what would that be? Meximation?
Oh, God.
Or Mexime, kind of like Japanime?
Here's a surprise, though. Read the next line.
At the end of the decade, Total Television folded when General Mills dropped out as a primary sponsor in 1969, but continued to retain the rights to the series until the mid-90s.
There's a surprise they folded.
Well, it's not actually a surprise, but... The syndicated version of The Underdog Show consists of 62 half-hour episodes. Supporting the segments differ from the show's original network run. The first 26 syndicated episodes feature Tennessee Tuxedo as a supporting segment. Tennessee Tuxedo originally aired as a separate show, and also his own syndicated adaptation. Thereafter, for most of the balance of the package, the middle segments include Go Go Gophers and Klondike Cat for three consecutive half-hours. And Tennessee Tuxedo in the fourth. Commander McBragg is featured in the majority of episodes, replaced by three segments of the Sing-Along family in shows number 1, 2, 3, number 28, 29. What the hell? Yeah.
2, 3, 28, 29.
Yeah, I lost count there. The final two syndicated Underdog half hours feature one-shot cartoons, originally part of the unsold pilot for a projected 1966 series and Champion Cauliflower Cable and Game on Gene Hatchery, with Commander Bragg appearing in show number 61, Go Go Gophers in 62. Do we really care about this?
No.
Like
we said before, most stories were multi-parters, but there were a couple times where they had standalones. The first four episodes were standalone. But most of the times they were multi-parters, which one I just don't like how they did it in this show. And like you had said before, it aired on ABC in Australia, and et cetera, with the Golden Books and Classic Media now owning them. But yeah, the show's just terrible. I mean, it's Underdog's
Tennessee Tuxedo is its only saving grace for me, and I didn't even know. I forgot that Tennessee had his own show separate from Underdog.
Yeah, but so, Underdog and most of his other
stuff. We should have just gotten research on Tennessee's show and not Underdog.
Underdog's theme song's better, but that's about it.
It is now time for the music segment. The theme song. The show was mostly remembered for the theme song. The title song, Underdog, which was written by Chester Stover and Watts, Biggers, Treadwell, Covington, and Joseph Harris. The lyrics begin. Take it away.
When criminals in this world appear and break the laws that they should fear and frighten all who see or hear, the cry goes up both far and near for Underdog. Sorry, that's my best version of that. You liked it.
It's actually better than the original.
guess this is another reference to this album. We've talked about it one other time, but a cover of the theme song performed by Butthole Surfers is included on the 95 tribute album Saturday Morning Cartoons Greatest Hits, which we talked about in one of the Hanna-Barbera shows. I don't remember which one. And then there's other versions.
Yeah.
Extended acapella version was done by the Blanks on the TV show Scrubs. And there's some other crap.
The series music was done by Watts Biggers. Going into the legacy segment here.
Oh, I did have something I wanted to point out real quick. I forgot to mention during the show.
Okay.
But your friend Sweet Polly Purebred, apparently that character was based on Marilyn Monroe, which seems like it was more like Lois Lane, but apparently the writers were basing that on Marilyn Monroe. And you'll like this one. An attempt was made in the early 90s to re-release Underdog in syndication, but because of the drug culture at the time, all references to the secret energy pill were removed. Without them, the cartoons did not make sense and were quickly pulled. This is a little ironic since the original reason the pills were added was to encourage children to take their vitamins.
And I'm psychic.
And in Japan, the show is called Ultra Puppy. The U still worked. The U could, since there was a U on a shirt, they could still call him Ultra Puppy. Anyway.
So, going into the legacy segment, Underdog has appeared in one little golden book, Underdog and the Disappearing Ice Cream, Charlton Comics, or Charlton Comics, produced a comic book that ran 10 issues from July 7, 1970 to January 1972. Gold Key Comics produced a comic book that ran 23 issues from March of 75 to February of 79. More Spotlight Comics, Harvey Comics, who gives a crap? DVD releases, here we go. On July 24, 2007, Classic Media released Underdog on DVD in Region 1 in a three-volume collection, following a previous three-volume set released in the late 1990s. Each volume features six digitally remastered episodes, each featuring two Underdog segments along with additional cartoons from the Total TV library.
That's a sucky library.
It is expected that other releases will follow in the future. Oh, boy.
Not talking about the next one.
We have to.
You can.
Film adaptation. In 2005, Variety reported that a live-action Underdog motion picture was in development by Spyglass Entertainment, scripted by Joe Piscatella and Craig A. Williams. And announced the story introduces a Shoeshine, who gets superpowers after a lab accident where he is adopted by a 12-year-old boy. The two form a bond around the shared knowledge of Shoeshine is really Underdog. Actor Peter Dinklage, oh wow, that's a horrible last name to have, was cast to play Simon Bar Sinister, while Alex Neuberger, I don't want a new burger. I don't want an old burger either. Was cast to play Underdog's human companion, Jack Unger. The movie started filming in Providence, Rhode Island in March 2006 and was released on August 3, 2007. Straight out of MPAA Film Board at PG, I was almost at PG-13. The film was described by distributed by Walt Disney Pictures. Shoeshine Underdog. There you go, Underdog, voiced by Jason Lee, was played by Lemon Beagle named Leo, sporting a red sweater and a blue cape. Oh, God.
Yep. Don't go watch it. Don't see it. Don't even admit
that. As much as I like Jason Lee, this was not a movie he should have done.
Yeah.
And I don't care about the radio thing.
Me neither. I don't even care about the show.
Anyways, so
my final thoughts.
I don't really care about the show.
The show is total television is total failure. You know, I wouldn't say that you shouldn't go on YouTube or something and check out an episode of Tennessee Tuxedo just to see Tennessee Tuxedo and Chumley. They're kind of cool. They're much more in the vein of like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon than all the other Total TV stuff. But I wouldn't buy anything that Total TV made. And I would not watch much of it either unless I had to for the show.
You know, it's just not good. You know the sad part about all this? This entire episode, I know my mom grew up watching and loving Underdog because she was 10 years old in 1964.
Yeah.
So that whole, from mid-60s to late 60s, I know she watched this, so hopefully she doesn't listen to this episode.
This is just, I like a lot of classic stuff, and this, I just can't.
Yeah, I can't get behind this one anymore either.
Sorry.
Alright, so thank you for joining.
Two thumbs down on this one.
Yeah, two stinky toes down. Thank you for joining us here on TuneCast. There are several ways to get in contact with us to leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. Join the forums, predaconempire.com/nexus. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Follow us on Twitter, GCR and TuneCast, DFG and Mike. What is your Twitter?
BossKDAWG.
Become a fan on Facebook, search GeekCast Radio Network, call the voicemail line, tell us the show you're leaving the message for, and your name, 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of TuneCast, wish you'll join us next time. We'll be reminiscing on the Pound Puppies. Cooler. For now, I am TFG and Mike with...
Optimus Solo, and we said Underdog 765 times this episode.
No, we didn't. Shut up.
I know.
Until next time.
come on and see Tennessee Tuxedo. Tennessee Tuxedo. He will be parachuting for your pleasure, sailing seas in search of treasure, anything so he can measure up to men. That's Tennessee Tuxedo, a small penguin who tries but can't succeed, although he may fail. As he fights for fame and glory, still he tries in each new story tales. Join along with me, the Club of Tennessee. We'll try each day through to learn something new to better you and me. Come on and see Tennessee Tuxedo. Tennessee Tuxedo. Though he may fail, as he fights for fame and glory, still he tries in each new story tale. That's Tennessee Tuxedo and his tale.
Get your shopping done right this holiday season with Big Air Columbus. Right now, you can get $100 off Elite Player Passes at Big Air, which is unlimited play all day, any day. Or buy one $25 gift card, get a free pair of holiday grip socks, plus a 1.5 hour pass to use after the new year. Big Air is the perfect gift for the kids in your family. So get your holiday shopping done right with Big Air Columbus. Stop by today inside Fieldhouse USA at the Polaris Mall or online at BigAirUSA.com.